Calling all star people, space invaders, metal gurus, technicolor mothers, electric freaks, and sunshine suicides. It's episode 34, and the heavy metal mothership has landed.
Nixon here with these three enlightened madmen, beautiful barbarians in the best sense of the word. It's Rock Under Fire. I'm here with Pat to my right, Mike right in front of me. Special guest tonight, Michael Minucci to my left. He's a rock star.
Michael Ziggy.
Fucking rock star.
Good afternoon, Mike.
Happy to be here.
Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
So while I was gone, I listened to the show that you guys did without me. You said there had been no rock star deaths. You're wrong. You missed Grant Hart, founding member of Husker Du. I just had to put that out there.
Okay.
But you guys missed
we didn't.
Him.
Yeah, we didn't discuss it.
Yeah, we missed that.
Of course, you talked a lot about Tom. You talked about Tom Petty.
Exclusively.
And, yeah, you talked about right?
The last, yeah.
The last episode was exclusively,
The Rock and Roll Zoo, Tom Petty's a friggin' elephant.
That's the downside of recording every 2 weeks. You know, the way at the rate people are fucking dropping dead, you forget. By the time of the next show, it's like, all right, who died? Then we're just going to change the name of the podcast to Who Died?
Yeah.
Dead under Fire.
Yeah, man.
Rock 6 feet under fire.
Rock 6 feet under fire.
Yeah. Fucking A, man. You know, short of being a freaking Beatle, you can't get any bigger in terms of success, fame, and respect than Tom Petty.
Yes.
Now, I don't know. Having said all that, I don't know how you guys felt. But his music was never precious to me. I was a lot more affected by Bowie last year, Prince, and Chuck than I was losing Tom this time around.
Yeah, we had that discussion, right? You were kind of surprised at what I said. You're like, what?
Yeah, you were more into him than I realized.
Well, not taking anything away from Bowie, man. But to be fair, I did not get into Bowie's catalog until like my early 20s. Tom Petty, I grew up with. Tom Petty was always there.
Yeah.
And that's the thing we discussed the most is that it was like a reflection of his childhood. Yeah. You know what I mean? We all have that one band or musician that when you were growing up, you're like, wow, this takes me back to that nice, warm, hot cocoa with the marshmallows. You're going to kick back and watch, I don't know, The Wizard of Oz with your family or some shit on the couch. Yeah. And for him, it was Petty. Fleetwood Mac would probably be mine because I always remembered listening to them in the big fucking gigantic headphones.
We've all got a lot of those.
Yeah.
I've been very close to Mike my whole life. I don't think I ever realized.
Yeah, I don't remember you being like a particularly big Tom Petty fan.
I got like several of his records. I never listened to them.
Yeah.
I'm not going to lie, man. Like in the last couple of years, if a Petty song comes on, I can't turn it off fast enough. That's been me the last couple of years. I think he's in that Billy Joel category for me. Tremendous respect. Call him a genius, but his work doesn't move me.
Well, yeah. Well, to that, I'll only say that the fact that he was 10, 15 years younger than those guys, man, the Wilburys, you know, he didn't knock on their door, man. They looked for him. They wanted him to get Bob Dylan's approval, George Parrott, you know.
Believe me, man. Well, I mean, since I do this podcast, I decided I got to do a little homework.
Yeah.
I did watch that Tom Petty Running Down a Dream doc on Netflix, which I didn't realize was 4 fucking hours long. And I almost turned it off 2 minutes in because there's Dave Grohl right off the bat talking. So I was like,
Dave Grohl's like,
everywhere.
Dave Grohl's
he's
like the herpes of the rock world. He's everywhere.
He's the token rock guy, man, of the 21st century.
God, you can't get rid of him.
That's what we're talking about.
In a world where there, you know, if we're talking the mainstream pop world, man, there's nothing really to represent rock anymore, man. So Dave Grohl has become the token rock guy. He's like the go-to guy. All right, an award show, get Dave Grohl.
Mm-hmm.
The fucking Dave Academy will do Awards, it.
Get Dave Grohl.
Yeah, he's the
Lionel
safe
Richie
choice.
Singing. He needs Lionel Richie needs somebody to sing with him. Get Dave Grohl.
He's like the Paul McCartney of rock. It's like, well,
Yeah, definitely.
He makes the weird faces while he's strumming and he's looking at the crowd.
He smiles a lot, man. And he says fuck a lot.
Got to thank our guest,
that's
Mike,
that's
for the,
he's cool.
The Don Julio.
Yeah, thanks
Julio
for the Don
tequila.
Julio. You shout out for that. I give him 20 bucks.
I love tequila. And tequila is different than other alcohols because actually it's kind of it's a stimulant,
okay.
I think, where most alcohols are depressant. So it actually gets you high as opposed to just, you know, trash. Cheers to that, gentlemen.
Yeah, man.
Cheers to the end of the world.
Could that be from the plant base that it is?
I think it is. Something about the, I don't know, the process or the agave.
That's definitely true. Absolutely true. Regardless.
Makes me want to go out and rule the world.
I'm almost done talking about Tom, but like astonishingly, man, 4 hours later, I watched the whole goddamn thing. I sat there for 4 fucking hours and watched the entire doc. A couple of things stuck out to me about Tom Petty. You guys might notice success appeared to come pretty easily for him. He put his band together, had a year or so in Gainesville, Florida, local success, decided he's going to take his band, go across country to Hollywood, where all the record companies are, and got offers from several labels right off the bat based on whatever tapes he brought with him. First album was a smash success, apparently, in Great Britain. He did this British tour where the fans were eating him up. The USA was a little further behind, but not too far, you know. Like our beloved Bruce Springsteen, pussy and drugs were never a big, I don't think, motivating thing in his life. There was like a brief passing of them getting.
Unfortunately, yeah. That's one of the problems.
That's one of the problems sometimes.
The great thing about Tom Petty and the shitty thing about Tom Petty are the same thing, which is it's so easily accessible and it's so middle of the road that it's not really dangerous. And it's not cutting edge, it's not new, but you can't not like it either because it's so...
It's got a hook driven, right?
So it's almost like, okay, it's Tom Petty.
He didn't really make great albums. He made a few great albums, but he was more a singles artist, man.
Yeah.
And that's not like disparaging or anything. I think it was instantly catchy hooks. Instantly catchy, man, but a third time you heard it, you knew it.
Mm-hmm.
But it was very easy to get sick of his music very quickly.
Well, yeah, I mentioned Free Fall, and I just got
instantly. That's what I realized.
Your first album has American Girl and Breakout on it, man. Came up in a time when FM radio was the main vehicle for getting music across to the masses.
To quote one of his songs, "You got lucky, Tom."
That actually might be my favorite Petty jam right there. That might be the one.
When FM radio found you.
Yeah, that might be it. And I realized the Full Moon Fever songs are the ones that I'm sick of. Like Free Falling, Learn to Fly. Those songs, I realized the earlier stuff, I'm still down with.
Well, because he's a billionaire at that point. It's like.
Yeah, yeah. Nevertheless.
And he was writing with Jeff Lynne, which I think ultimately hurt. You know, the Jeff Lynne stuff, and I don't know if we talked about this, the Jeff Lynne produced music of the late 80s sounds totally fucking dated now, man.
Jeff Lynne drum, if I ever hear it again, I'm going to jump out the window.
Fucking Full Moon Fever is Into the Great Wide Open. It's to that
George Harrison.
Armchair Theater that Jeff Lynne did, the George Harrison thing, yeah. Cloud Nine, all that fucking Jeff Lynne drum sound. Which to me is dated now.
It is. It sounds dated.
It hasn't aged very well.
That's not taking anything away from Jeff Lynne, but
not at all.
Rick Rubin record and a Jeff Lynne record. I think you tell me which one's going to be around in 20 years.
Like from 77 to about 82, man. All that's good after.
They knew how to make records in the 70s.
You know who knew
how to record records.
I mean, Stevie Nicks positively loved him. And like Stop Dragging My Heart Around is like still one of my greatest like classic rock songs that I love.
Who doesn't love that?
I certainly do, man.
And that was stolen from him. Did you watch the doc on... the Defiant ones yet? Did you see that?
Yes.
I need to see that.
Yeah. 4 parts, HBO. I've been preaching about it. But they talk about how Jimmy Iovine actually stole that song from Tom Petty because he was producing Stevie's record. And he's like, "Hey, man, I want you to hear this." And Tom was like, "You just stole my song, man." He goes, "I don't know, worry about it. It's going to buy you a house." He goes, "I don't want a house. I want my song."
Right.
And that song was released. What was the record that came out? The Petty record, Mike?
Petty put out Hard Promises and Stevie Nicks.
They were simultaneously released, and his album suffered from that being such a huge
hit.
That's what
they were saying.
People were buying a Stevie record.
You know what's funny, man? Like, Jimmy Iovine is everywhere I look now all of a sudden. He's on every doc. He's everywhere. That guy is...
I can't say it enough how great the Defiant Ones was. I mean, to see that guy, where he went... where he started and came from to where he ended up sitting in a fucking Dodge with Dr. Dre, who is the hip-hop genius of hip-hop, to see those guys sitting in a Dodge with a programmer because they're programming the sound system to each other's iPhones. Dre would go, "Okay, well, I got some fucking NWA right here. Let's see how this sounds." And Iovine goes, he goes, "You're the master of the bass. You're the master of the bass, kid." He goes, "But let's check this out." He goes into like a Patti Smith song or fucking Tom Petty song. And it's just mind-blowing that the guy started out as an engineer on Bruce Records. And Bruce said, "Hey, come produce this album for us." And it got where he is. They're billionaires.
Yeah, he's everywhere, man. Well, I was disappointed, though, that there was no indication that Tom was banging Stevie. That's all I wanted to know, man. No indication at all. He had to be fucking her.
Yeah, they were dating.
Let me not misquote her. She said that she thought that the Heartbreakers were the greatest American band there was, and she would have rather been in their band than Fleetwood Mac. I think she actually said that.
Bob Dylan said that, too, man. He said they were the last great American band.
Right.
And so he said that in 1986.
It's me. I must be missing something.
He said that in 1986. So there must have been some sort of sentiment at the time, man, that rock and roll was going downhill even then.
Yeah, yeah.
You
know, oh, yeah.
You look back on it now in retrospect.
We were hating on music in the late 80s. What were we talking about? Look how...
All right, we need to move on from Tom.
Yeah, let's move
we
on.
Love
let's
Tom
forget
Petty.
Tom. Let's forget Tom. But, this is why Michael Ziggy over here is such an interesting guest for us, because I think in many ways he's opposed to our view that the glory days are over and that it's all dead.
He's always maintained
that we're old and crotchety, and there's plenty of great stuff out there if we would only... clear across the horizon. Look,
and you have a new album. Actually, I we need to mention, man, and I think we kind of failed to mention it at the outset. Your band, Turn Me On, Dead Man. You have some new music with you, Heavy Metal Mothership.
Yes, indeed, Michael. We just released a new record, our fifth record, Heavy Metal Mothership, on an Italian label called Heavy Psych Sounds, which someone mentioned this label to me 2 years ago. And they're like, oh, you guys belong in this label. It's heavy, psychedelic, weird metal rock from Italy, you know, based in Italy. I was like, oh, this sounds really good. And I hounded the owner of the record label for about 2 years.
Did you really?
Yeah. I just.
And you had already had records out by that point?
I mean, yeah, we had four records out.
Okay, so you were just juicing and with all the stuff you had.
Yeah, you know, go back to Jello Biafra.
We were
right?
on yeah. Alternative Tentacles for first two records.
Yeah.
Jello Biafra, then we floated for like the fourth record, and Heavy Psych Sounds, who's run by a gentleman named Gabriel, very nice man. I just cold called him basically. I was like, "Here's my band. We got some songs." Blah blah blah. He didn't want to hear it for 2 years.
Wow. And
eventually, he's like, "Yeah, let's do this," and he signed us officially, and then. I got this colored vinyl in the mail. Just
oh yeah,
last
open
week.
It up. Show the fellas the beautiful colored vinyl.
Was released.
We're a sucker for that.
Officially, October 13th, a very auspicious day. So we got.
Wow, that's tremendous.
Colored vinyl, which sounds amazing. Vinyl really does sound a world different from digital. FYI, kids, get yourself a record player while you still can.
Yeah.
So
you know what's cool? I don't know, and I haven't done it. But people are still buying them, and they're bringing in that sound like via USB into like a MacBook or even into like any computer, really. And I just don't know if they're capturing
I don't believe
the
hype.
Essence of the sound of listening to it in speakers like those, you know, like sticks.
Yeah, Technics 1200.
Yeah, you know, I just don't know if they're capturing the true essence of it. I love it. This is fantastic. I mean, to have a vinyl record in your hand, there's nothing better than that in the world. And it's your record. I mean, that's even got to be, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I bought one of those Audio Technicas, man, PL120, which is kind of modeled. The design is after the Technics 1200, which is like one, you know, you DJ, man, so maybe you could tell me. Supposedly one of the better DJ turntables, and it sounds great.
You did buy it.
It was
You found it.
I found it for $300, man, for under three. Actually,
you're a DJ. Is that what they?
I'm not a DJ.
No, you were.
You've done it. You've done some, right?
The reason
me too.
Is that many?
Everyone loves the Technics 1200 table is because it's built like a tank.
Yeah,
it's heavy. It's
sturdy as fuck.
It's heavy, and first thing you learn when you DJ is when you turn that music up loud. Your service on starts vibrating and it starts shaking your record. So that's why everyone goes to those turntables because they're so heavy and solid that they shake the least out of any other turntable. But, vinyl is a pain in the butt. Stick Nixon just dropped his tequila, folks. Vinyl is a pain in the butt. But if you have a good receiver and a good pair of speakers and a good turntable with a new needle, and a fresh record, there is nothing that sounds nothing that sounds like it. But you really need all those things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you got to really be an audiophile
to love music, and that's what we do.
Yeah,
yeah.
How did they ever fool us with those CDs all those years?
My new obsession is vintage receivers.
Compact disc. I mean, it was you could stuff 9 of them in your car, 15 of them in your car.
I had to be part of it, right? I had to be part of it.
It was a marketing ploy, man.
It really was.
Let's take the entire back catalog that existed
and make more money
and just reissue it in CD form and have all the boomers.
And they're doing it now with a 4K video. They
it
went from DVD to
Blu-ray
to 4K. You're right. You're right. They're getting paid over and over again.
We've talked about that extensively on the show.
Vinyl did not die, and I'm very happy about it. And
came real close, though, didn't it?
It came really close to dying. But if you go into, like, you know, cool, whatever, barbershops, hair salons, restaurants, you'll see record players, and people will actually put on what a concept. They'll actually put a record on from beginning to end. Mm. Not a single, not a song. Mm-hmm. They'll actually play an entire record side. Because records were designed to be played all the way through. They weren't designed to be singles, at least not since the 1950s.
And right. That's one of the biggest things we've lost, man. It goes back to what we say, like our whole underlying thing, man. It's we've gone back to a single, to the singles era, man.
Because we've lost attention span.
And even
people
then.
People don't have an attention
span. Yeah, that's
span
a great
anymore.
Point. Everybody's
even then, the
now,
music
now,
was still
now,
tangible,
now.
Man, where you could put a 45 single in your hand.
See, I'm one of those guys, though, that will still. I'm still good. I've gone away from buying the hard stuff, you know, and just kind of buying digital music. I'll still listen to a whole record, but I've just kept listening. I'm listening to it on digital audio, you know what I mean? I'm one of those guys who's kind of moved.
Oh, dude, don't fuck that up.
I've moved. I guess I've kind of moved on from it, and it, you know.
I still play my CDs.
I mean, you guys know the story. My record collection was totally trashed in a fucking car accident.
Well, you know what?
Every single one of them gone.
It would be hard. It would be hard to start fresh if you had no vinyl.
I'm not
to start
about
now. It would be hard.
I mean, I have days and days and days worth of music digitally, but some of the stuff I've already transferred over myself. And
that's.
But I that's just me. You're not going to get a 15-year-old kid listen to. He's only going to listen to one or two songs. The attention span. That's what I was agreeing with your point. The attention span these days of teenagers is just fucking. Yeah.
But this is a detriment of our society right now. So no one has an attention span. And you can't, I mean, this is maybe why music sucks, because people don't have, kids are not listening to 30, 40 minute long records from beginning to end and just analyzing it because they spent $10 on it, which was big money 20 years ago, 30 years ago. $20 was huge money.
Yeah.
So you played that record.
Yeah.
But the point you brought up before was, you know, one thing that irks me, I know Dr. Marlowe gets on this kick all the time, is that the music's dead and there's no good bands now. And I think that's a bunch of baloney, because there's maybe it's not the Renaissance anymore. It's not the 1967. It's not 1973. It's not the big, big monster artist, but there's just amazing B+ rate bands everywhere, of all genres. You know, you got shoegaze bands, you got weird dark wave bands, you got electronic German techno stuff, you got Turn Me On Dead Man playing psychedelic rock.
I don't think we'd argue with that.
No,
you know?
I don't argue with that at all.
But I found that there's more. I shouldn't say more. I don't know this for a fact, but I'm seeing more European stuff come out, and it almost like. Is what we were doing already, and it's just still alive and well over there, and they're putting out fresh records. And Finland, for one, was one of them. I don't know. I brought up. You ever hear of Thermate? I brought them up. I'm trying. I am really trying to go out there. And a friend of mine turned me on to them, and they're really good. And it's still heavier. It's a heavier 70s sound, but
you're talking about them a couple shows ago, right?
Yeah, I'm trying.
Gotta look them up.
They're looking to, you know, I'm definitely trying.
You know, I was talking. I don't know if we can talk about this online. I guess you can cut it if not good.
Yeah.
But I know you got in trouble playing music online, but that was bigger bands.
That was
Floyd,
with YouTube.
Right?
Yeah, only YouTube only.
Younger bands, smaller bands. One, I'm sure would love the exposure.
Sure.
Two, I don't think you'll get popped for any reason with these bands. And I think it'd be awesome to at least once a month have like a new music episode, whatever it is. Metal from Norway, psych pop from L.A. Right. There's tons of bands, tons and tons and tons of bands. Some of my new favorite, one of our favorites, Wand, came out with a new record just last month. Drab Majesty, have you heard them?
No.
Incredible band. I brought some of them to play for you guys. Incredible. I saw them a year ago. They played in just a little dump, and I saw them 4 days ago, and they're going to be big stars. So it's just, you know, like it's happening. It's totally happening still. It's just mainstream radio is such a whore and such garbage that they don't, you know, they just go for lowest common denominator. Right. They don't do anything weird.
Is that why these bands can't make a hit single? That's the root of the problem, man, is that, you know, I agree with everything you're saying, man. You know, my whole thing is, you know, rock, you know, when we say rock is dead, rock is not dead. Rock is dead as we knew it, in the sense that it was the center of the cultural zeitgeist. It was the zeitgeist. It informed everything, mm-hmm. right? It reflected the world. It reflected politics, man. It informed fashion. It created fashion statements. It was, you know, every kid that was 13 mm-hmm. years old, man, wanted to grow their hair long and be Jimmy Page, you know. Now, if they happen to know Zeppelin, it's maybe through, you know, it's their my grandfather's music, stuff like that, you know. The new rock stars are hip-hop stars. And, you know, I'm more interested in, you know, what we do here is kind of look at why and kind of look at, you know, what are the contributing factors to pop culture as a whole. And we kind of look at it on that level, man.
I blame the media. I mean, look at MTV. MTV used to stand for, you ready for this, folks? Music television.
Music television.
That's what MTV used to, shocking, I know.
Believe it or not.
MTV used to stand for music television. And MTV used to do something called MTV Unplugged, where they'd have...
Great show.
Big bands of the time unplug from their amps and pick up acoustics and, you know, like, let's have Alice in Chains play their, you know,
Stevie Ray Vaughan
metal tunes acoustic. And then you can hear, like, wow, these are actually really well-written songs with meaning behind it and just killer music. And MTV just threw it to the gutter and became a reality show.
Yeah, it became programming.
Reality TV pop. So... it's not lack of music. It's our culture has just become so vapid, and people have just been so dumbed down, and the attention span is gone.
That's a really good point, man.
It really is.
The culture is our culture is gone. It's not for lack of talent out there.
And MTV was an important medium for all of us, man, growing up, you know. MTV hatched this careers of 100 stars, man, you know.
Tom Petty, if you want, I'm sure.
Yeah. And it put a face to... It put a face to the musician that sometimes you might not have been able to see. You know, I mean,
uh-huh.
Now the high point of a—I won't even say musician—the high point of a pop star's career is playing, you know, halftime at the Super Bowl.
Yeah,
I'm like, what
is
that?
That's
sad. Okay, you've got some.
I would argue like, Tom Petty, though. I mean, Tom Petty was already well established before MTV.
Well, yeah, because he came up in the
70s. But he took advantage of it. I think he was the one that of his generation that kind of. You know, used MTV to his advantage the most because his videos were little films, man. His videos were incredible.
Him.
Every Gabriel. One of them. And he used it very effectively.
A couple of them.
It's a machine now. It's a machine, and it's a club. And if you're not part of the club, you can be a great band, and you're not going to hear about them.
Yeah.
And also, you can be a shitty old dinosaur, but if you just happen to be well-established in the network, you're just going to, you know... we just can't get rid of you.
No.
And you know the artists that they do set, they're really not, the A&R people are not really signing rock artists anymore. They're signing hip hop, they're signing country, they're signing, you know, whatever the next flavor of the week is. The stuff
and that hybrid, hybrid mix.
Yeah.
Country. So,
and the ones that they
country's
do,
enormous.
Man.
And you got rap
really...
stars showing up at country music videos and stuff now.
They don't really encourage staying power, man, where artists have, you know, artists are allowed to evolve on their own criteria, man. Staying power, artistic clout. You don't have
that
anymore, man.
That's why we have to go back to the grassroots. And with things like this podcast, you have to start breaking little bands. You've got the power. Once a month, start doing 60 minutes of new music.
Now we can't play their songs without fear for the very reasons you stated. I'm sure we could. Nobody from Thermate's going to get pissed off if we play
their Thermate's
song.
Not going to get bent out of shape. I'll call them up and be like, hey, man, this is our podcast. We're going to play some of your stuff, dissect the shit out of it, and go for it.
It's interesting, man. It's, you know, because it really goes down to the publisher of the music, man. If the publisher has a hold on anything, man, on YouTube, those bots, and we talked about the bots in the Ticketmaster episode.
Those fucking bots.
Fucking spiders, man. It just, like, the second anything that's copyrighted, man, comes up. It could be out there for a second. Pulls it right
Pink
down.
Floyd flag this of all bands.
That episode was up. Our Christmas episode was up for like 2 minutes, man. I got three emails in a row within like 2 minutes of each other. In under 5 minutes, this happened.
Well, they're a pretty big band.
3 hour show, man. 3 hour show.
They wrote a hit or two.
Prince would do the same thing. You couldn't use Prince's music for anything. He
guarded his music with his life.
Whatever.
But yeah, but new music. I totally agree with you, man.
Which was great with the whole Warner Brothers fucking ordeal. See, that's I'd like to talk to you a little bit about that kind of stuff. Being a musician for as long as you have, and you've got five records out, the fucking bump and grind of dealing with industry people has to be just fucking. You have to be ready to just fucking jump out a window with these fucking guys. Is there any truth to that?
Have you been able to avoid that too? That's the second part of that question.
I mean, they're all out there just to fucking, what can you do for me or what have you done for me lately? I mean, you know, all they see is dollar signs. It's, you know, and this is an insider's perspective at this point.
Because you seem to operate independently of that.
Well, being a psychedelic glam metal band, we're pretty under the radar. I mean, we're not like a pop country, you know.
That hybrid.
We're not playing a Super Bowl halftime anytime soon. But, you know, obviously, we don't follow rules whatsoever. We do things our own way, which are finally paying off. But to a European market, we're Tourmillion Demand is going on tour in Europe in February, which we're very excited about. Via our new record label, Heavy Psych Sounds, which is based in Italy, they're gonna be booking us a tour in Italy, Germany, Austria, Switzerland.
They're paying for your lodging and your transportation and whatnot.
Well. You ready for this? We've played in the States a little bit. We've played West Coast, and it's basic. It's brutal. It's brutal for a couple of ways. One, the towns are so far apart.
Yeah.
I mean, America is such a huge country. You got to drive all day to get from, you know,
just the coast of California,
Medford to Portland. You know, it's just it's insane. Towns are close together in Europe. Also. From what I understand, I haven't been there yet, but they feed you when you play. What a thought, right? You're the band playing.
Imagine that.
They feed you. Drinks are normally on the house.
Fucking socialist.
You get paid, and they give you a place to sleep as well. What kind of socialist commie garbage are those bastards up to? Not only that, the record label was telling me that there's a town in Switzerland, which I think we're gonna, I don't know what town it is. Place in Switzerland, he said the kids will actually leave their cell phones home when they go out to see a band out of respect. That's unheard of here in the state. So it's a different climate there.
Wow.
So I'm hoping we go there, create a buzz, and, you know, like our buddy, you know, Jimmy James, Mr. Hendrix, he's from Seattle.
Yeah.
And no one paid attention to him. He went there. He had to go to England first.
Yeah.
And then he got big. And then they spun it as like, oh, here comes Jimmy from England. I was like, no, he's from Seattle.
He's an American
boy. And no one cared here. But they saw his genius over there, and then he came back.
And all those British guitar players were like, Jesus Christ, this guy is doing things that we can't even imagine on a guitar.
Yeah, so it's a different climate.
That's an interesting. I definitely understand the fact that getting from city to city is just boom boom. You can take a train ride and be through half of Europe in a day and a half.
Countries are like states over there.
Yeah,
that's so exciting, man. I mean, your persistence has really paid off, man.
At February,
congratulations,
you're going over there?
That's fantastic. Yeah. Man.
Persistence, it's
long time coming. You deserve it. Yeah, but you have that, man. You know, all the great ones do. You know,
I heard it's 90%
perspiration.
Yes. And we have that, you know,
being
a Jersey boy myself, we're born, you know, in the fires. We're forged in the fires, Mount Doom. You know? Nothing can break us.
We just keep chugging along.
We keep chugging.
I agree with that.
Your musical trajectory was not that much different than ours. Started with the heavy metal, and like me and Mike, in the late 80s, you took a little left turn at Bob Dylan and Jimi Hendrix and whatnot. Then you circled the wagon.
You left here a hippie, man, and came back.
You left a hippie.
I'm still half hippie. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we all played together.
We're all hippies, man.
You're Stick still a Nixon, hippie at heart. Mr. You go by your real. Your,
oh, yeah, man.
Mr. Jerico over here. We all played together back in the day in high school. And so here's the winning formula. You grow up on hippie music. And then, you grow up on metal first.
Yeah.
Learn
metal.
Learn how to play. Learn how to play those riffs that, you know, drive the young kids wild. Then you start chomping those sugar cubes.
Yep.
And then listen to hippie music. So it's a blend of that. I mean, that's what 90s rock was basically. It was just a blend of like hippie stuff and like hard rock stuff.
It really was.
And it's a beautiful thing. So
we were talking before, man. I never would have sang if you did not place me in front of a microphone and not take no for an answer. I'm really not a singer. Like, fuck, sing.
I remember you're that singing. Going like, on. Yeah. You're going to sing. I'm not a singer. You're going to sing. You're going to sing. You're the singer of this band. Dude, I can't
I'm glad
sing,
he
but
did.
You're the singer. You're the singer I want. I want you as the front man, but I can't sing. But you're the front man. You're singing.
So I just threw vegetables around for a couple of years to compensate.
History was made.
How long did it take you to record the record?
It came out last year, and then we got signed to Heavy Psych Sound, okay. So we pulled it. We actually remastered it, okay. So it is kind of a different record. We cut some songs to fit it on vinyl because we, CDs like 80 minutes long. Vinyl's like 35 minutes long. Wow. If you go over 35 minutes on vinyl, you start losing sonic quality. So you have to cut songs. That's why all records just have, 17 minutes aside. That's it. Everyone knows it. Like, you start sounding like poop if you go along with it. So we had to reformulate it, but it's great. It's great. It's when you have to cut fat. Imagine taking the White Album double album, just cutting it down to one album would have been their best record.
Making The Godfather an hour and a half movie or something.
But how long did it take to make? Some of these riffs were floating in my head for 20 years.
Wow.
But recording, we recorded for a solid 2 years.
There was a great deal of frustration in terms of just getting that sound, experimenting, putting the microphones here, no putting them there.
Well, we did something that I swore I would never do again, which is I play guitar. The other guitar player in the band is Nick Doom, who owns a studio in San Francisco. That's pretty convenient, right? Your guitar player owns a recording studio. And we're talking a real studio. This is analog, 2-inch tape, $1 million studio. Mm. Beautiful, beautiful facility. And Nick Doom's a great guy. He's a fantastic guitar player. but the downside, double edge of this, is that you kind of have unlimited time to record. So we went way deep down the rabbit hole and just did every trick possible and put everything in the kitchen sink. So it's... It's very much a studio record, like a Magical Mystery Tour is a studio record. I love studio records. The early Dead records, studio records, just sounds. It was made to be a record.
We all agreed on that about this early Dead record.
Yep. But I'll never do it again because in the time it took us to do that, we could have made two.
How does it translate live when you record something like that? Are you having a good fun with it? Is it difficult? Is the arrangement a fucking bitch?
It's fucking difficult because these songs are very difficult, and it's a different sound live. Mm. You're gonna have to come hear us. Next month, November, we got a show, and we got two shows in November, and you'll have to come check it out.
You're out here?
No,
you're flying out there. Don't get your hopes up.
You're coming out to the Golden State.
He's on the West Coast more than I am.
I love the West Coast, but I can't do it in November. I'm all out of vacation time.
I don't know if we're planning on playing any of the songs on here. What song would you want to play?
We'll jot that.
I mean, if there is such a thing, I would say Maharishi, our good friend.
Maharishi.
Is he?
Michael Nirenberg was on our show, and this show is just a baby, man, about a year ago now. I had dinner with Michael Nirenberg, and there was a you want the dancing girls in it, and he does not. He was saying something like that. You want pretty girls, and he wants to do away with the pretty girls. That's what he told
Michael
me.
Michael Nirenberg, as far as I understand, I have not seen this video, but it's supposed to be clay animation, claymation.
Oh, really?
Oh, wow.
And old school,
sweet
work intensive video. I was like, Michael, just go the easy way, put some titties and colors in there, just call it a day. He's like, no, I'm gonna.
Which song is he doing?
He's doing a song called Maharishi.
Let's listen to a little bit of that.
We'll be right back.
There you have it, folks. Maharishi, first single off Heavy Metal Mothership from Turn Me On, Dead Man.
I love the album cover, man.
Thank you.
I'm digging everything about it.
Thank you.
Cool
what do you
stuff.
See? What's your impression of the album cover? What do you see? I worked hard on this. I want to know what
is that your work?
I was breathing over the shoulder of the artist working on it.
Okay.
So it was a combination. It was a joint effort.
There's like so many different like, things
what's
in
what's going
it,
on? Yeah.
Life and death and afterbirth and revival. Man, women.
What's going on? We've got crescent moons.
I see a little bit of 2001 A Space Odyssey. Well, actually, it looked like the Crown of Creation, but it's not, man.
We got Vimanas.
Cloud, but it's not.
We've got reptilian overlord eyeballs.
Yeah.
We've got other dimensions. And the font of Heavy Metal Mothership is actually... Does anyone recognize that font?
No.
Very specific font.
Don't tell me what this
very
is,
very specific
man.
Font.
Oh, boy. What is that?
Very specific font.
Where's that from?
A lady named Megan Humphrey worked hard to... she had to, by hand, do this font because it didn't exist.
Mm-hmm. Is it heavy metal?
No.
Nope.
No, it's close. It is the... Xanadu, Olivia Newton-John font.
That's it.
It's all sparkly.
It. I wish
like,
I would have thought of
that. You got to get that Xanadu font. I need that Xanadu. Because, you know, Turn Me On, Dead Man is about all things sparkly, and you don't get more sparkly than just roller ranks and roller girls and just
no.
disco balls mixed with flying saucers. I mean, all of it's in there.
Dominic, if you're listening, you got to listen to this record. It's,
yeah.
I was listening to it before we came on air, and it's... Yeah, he's the one who turned me on to Thermate, and this is this is good. You're gonna really dig this. This is good riding music, man.
Yeah,
psychedelic metal.
It is psychedelic metal. It's like a little Judas Priest, a little Pinch of Hendrix.
I heard I almost heard some Dream Theater in there.
Little Pinch.
And I hate to say that to somebody, the guy sitting right in front of me who recorded the record. The worst thing in the world is to be compared to somebody else.
These are all my heroes, man. You know, yes. Jane's Addiction. I mean, Priest was my first concert.
You were always a big, more than anyone I've ever known, a champion of Billy Corgan and the Smashing Pumpkins.
Oh, I
huge
love
influence.
Billy
yeah,
Corgan,
he was. Yeah, he's one of your guys, one of your main guys.
Well, he's you know, he's complex like any artist, and is he an asshole? I'm sure. Yeah. Is Dylan an asshole? I'm sure.
Yeah.
You know, like, none of that. Is Woody Allen an asshole? I'm sure. Like, it doesn't matter. These people have a knack to create amazing stuff. And, you know, I have to say, I'm just a lover of that 90s sound. It's just big sound. It's kind of Narcotica influenced, and it's out there and psychedelic, and that's kind of what we grew up on. And I think 20 years have passed, and it's okay to do it now.
Yeah.
Again.
Yeah. Fantastic.
Time to bring the rock back.
Here.
Yeah.
Enough drum machines.
You've always had an ear, you know, you've always had your finger on the pulse, man, for whatever. I remember in the year 2000, you came here, man, from San Francisco, talking about a band I never heard of called the White Stripes. Never heard of them. Less than a year later, they were gigantic. You've done that several times throughout the course of our life. You're one step ahead with things that have happened.
I think one of the factors is I don't watch TV. All I have is music. So I just listen to shit constantly.
Yeah.
There's nothing else to do. And
that's a good
TV is a huge distraction, especially in this day and age when it just divides people and gets people arguing against just nonsense. It's just like, no, shut off the TV, create some art, create a band, make a painting, you know.
Or in your case, write a blog.
Write a blog about Miley Cyrus.
I'm so happy you're doing this podcast. It really is great. It really is amazing.
It keeps me sane, man.
I'd love to get Dr. Marlowe on his own podcast, like on the regular.
Yeah. I'm trying to get Marlowe to write a book.
He needs to write a book.
A few books in him.
He needs to get his nose out of politics.
And he's just being stubborn,
and,
man.
And just stick to what he knows, which is... You know,
yeah, I didn't
the
expect
magic
him to be so political. That was,
he was
an interesting cat, man. I did enjoy meeting him.
Yeah, the politics isn't getting him anywhere now.
This is a new aspect of Dr. Marlowe. He's getting distracted with politics. He needs to get back to the source.
He's given back to society plenty, but he could do more. And that is right, his book, man.
Get him back
his Dylan book never came out. He was supposed to write a Dylan book fucking 20 years ago.
Let's
back
you
to
know,
where you once belonged.
I don't know if you want to take Rock Under Fire in this direction, but if not, man, open start another podcast. That's just
I think about it all the time, man. I think about two or three podcasts just at the same time.
Popping
underground
music.
My wheels are always turning, man, in a creative and form with what we could do.
Anytime I hear something, I'll send you like a link. Check out this band, and vice versa. Let's just it'll be the symbiotic relationship where we just keep hearing this new music, new music, new music, new music. And we're going to turn some people on to some great music.
I love the idea about the once a month. Let's talk about something.
That's the thing.
New.
We only record twice a month. You know, but every once I agree. Like every once in a while, we do an episode where we just kind of, and it would be easy for us. We don't have to talk.
Even if we did multiple bands in one episode, I mean, that takes up the entire episode. We take
or
5 minutes
or
10 minutes.
Or I also thought about like, you know,
group.
Like a feature song rather than having our theme song both times at both ends of our show, close out with a featured song. Like if you send me something, like, okay, this is what you're sending me this time. Send me something every 2 weeks, you know, and maybe play it, man. This will be our featured artist on this show, you know, music courtesy of whatever band, you know.
Totally digging that.
So, yeah, man, there's a lot of ways to do that. There's a lot of ways.
You
to
heard
do
it
that.
Here first, folks. The news is broke.
Yeah, man. What if I hatched a new idea?
Yeah,
man.
What's going on started as just the three of us sitting in the room, like, so what's going on, guys? Yeah. And it turned into what's going on.
He brought that to the
he definitely brought that to the table. Stick definitely brought
baby,
that to the
man.
But it just turned out this
was organic,
what's going on this week, and then
it just
looked where
it
went.
So far, the Marvin Gaye estate hasn't complained.
Yeah.
And we did sing that one night. Like fools.
That was supposed to be a regular part of it. Never.
I wonder if like the bots detect human voice singing something like that.
I have no idea.
I don't know if you guys sing as good as Marvin. That's probably why.
Yeah.
No, man. It's
like, okay, probably we'll let not. It go, man.
It's like butter, cocoa butter.
I'm more of a my vocal prowess would be more of like a I don't know. It's not cocoa butter.
So let's
well, you know, we're not profiting.
It's Jim Morrison,
we're not,
alcohol,
we're not
cigarettes.
Money. So you would think that you know the logical perspective would be that you know if we're making money off of this podcast, then they're gonna you can't use our song.
Yeah.
You know, then you got to license it. Our society is so backwards. I did live in Austin for a while, and I live in San Francisco now. San Francisco, you got this bullshit of you pay to play type thing.
Yeah.
Either you have to guarantee a certain amount of tickets to be sold, or
Jersey did that shit.
You remembered it.
Sure.
You remembered after.
Oh, same.
Back
same
here.
Here. Did it here. Same here. Or you know, you're like $10. But guess what? People don't want to reach in their pocket and pay $10 for a band they never heard.
Mm.
A band they heard, sure. But $10, if you got a date, $20, they don't want to spend $20. They just want to get a drink and talk to this girl and get laid. They don't want to spend $20 to hear an unknown band. But in Austin, they don't charge to get into places.
No place. How do they cover the band of bands? Or they don't? The bands just
they
play?
Don't.
They just play.
They don't. Bands just play
That's
because they love to play
love
music.
It. That's fucking
right?
awesome.
And when I was in Austin, you just walk in any place because there's no cover. So
yeah.
You go in any place.
New
and
Orleans
guess what?
Is the
you,
same thing.
And you have
no
a
covers.
Beer because you don't you can go in.
Yep.
And there's a band playing. So I'm just going to go in. There's no cover. And you know the bar knows if there's tons of people there screaming cuz your music's so good, they know they need to give you some money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a no-brainer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I remember first when I first got to Austin, I'd go to this one bar and there was this band and they weren't that good. And they were playing, and I was like, this band's kind of horrible, you know. But whatever, it's Wednesday night. I didn't pay it anything to get in. What can I say? Went back, like, you know, 10 days later, there's that same shitty band again. I was like, oh, it's this band playing again? This is horrible. Like, I don't want to see this band, but, like, there's nothing I could say because I didn't pay. And this went on for about, you know, this band would just hit it. Right? Basically, this band was practicing on stage.
Huh.
Which is the way to do it, folks. You don't practice in a room with fluorescent lights. You practice on stage in front of people. After about 6-8 months of seeing the shitty band, they started to get really good. And I saw the transformation in front of my eyes. I was like, oh, these guys are actually good now. And the crowd was liking them. And I was like, oh, this is how you create a music scene. You just let bands play. You don't charge at the door. People just come in. They buy their drinks. And then the band got great.
Wow.
And then people started coming to see him, and I was like, "Oh, we're so dumb in California.
Yeah,
we're
we
so
got it all
backwards.
Wrong. Yeah, got it all wrong.
We got it totally wrong, and that's why Austin built, you know, calls itself the live music capital of the world because people go see music all the time.
That's how we ended up playing.
I saw a lot of music in New Orleans, man. It was the same way. I just bounced from bar to bar to bar. This band wasn't. This didn't do it for me. I walked into the next one. This one didn't do it. And this was any time of the year. It doesn't have to be Mardi Gras. Yeah. All those bars are open all year round. The guy was telling me, I was talking to one of the guys, and they're doing covers. They're not doing, you know, there's places that have, their, you know, live, good live music. But one of the cover guys, I got to talking to him a little bit. He's like, this is my job. This is my full-time job. We do this every night. I get paid here to play here every single night. I'm like, Jesus Christ, man. That's, you're living the dream.
Serious.
Oh, man. You know, if you were a bass player in a band in Austin, you know, people ask you, hey, what do you do? Stick Nixon, what do you do? Oh, I'm a bass player. Oh, like, oh, that's a legitimate occupation. You know, like, they're like, oh, cool. Like, you can be totally respected as like, oh, yeah, I'm playing washboard in this band over there.
But you didn't stay in Austin.
No.
There's extenuating circumstances.
Last I checked, Austin was in the middle of Texas. And Texas is a very interesting place.
Yeah, Texas. I was there for the first time this year. Texas was definitely different.
They know how to party. They love to party. And there's some really fun people and some really nice people. But it's just something stifling about it.
I made Jersey proud when I went to Texas. Aaron, I know you're listening, son. That
what
dude
happened?
Woke up and he woke up on his garage floor. He looked gray. I thought he was going to die. I showed him how to drink down there.
Our buddy Aaron? Which Aaron?
Not your buddy Aaron. No, Texas Aaron. My cousin Aaron. Poor Aaron, man. I had to
Shout
stay outside
out
when I was so worried.
He's dead.
Where
you killed a man.
Where in Texas? Huh?
You killed a man.
No. I was in Dallas.
Where in Texas? Oh, he's
Dallas,
in Dallas.
Fort Worth,
okay.
Yeah. Josh, and then Josh, I don't know if you're still listening, but I'm coming down to
recording?
Houston next.
I know you put out an album while you were in Austin, right? Did you record? Did one of your records come
yeah,
out
well,
while
we
you
did,
were there?
We did
how
do
did
a,
you do that? I remember you telling me your other... The other guys were still out in San Francisco.
I moved to Austin because Turn Me On Deadman had broken up. This is like 2010, right. 2009. We were not. And I was like, well, there's nothing for me here. I've been to Austin a few times. It is an incredible party town. But if you don't want to party, if you don't want to start drinking at 3 o'clock in the afternoon every day, it's kind of like, okay, what are you going to do? So I moved out there. And then after a couple years... My drummer Christopher Lyman called me up out of the blue, and he's like, we got to get the band back together. Out of the blue, when I was in Austin, I was like, he's like, I'll pay for us to record a record. Let's record a record. And that was like candy for me. I was like, really? You want to make a record? Okay, I got some riffs. Let's do that. So I just...
Were you playing
out there? I was playing with some people, but I wasn't really... Yeah.
Weren't inspired or anything by it.
Right? I was inspired. Austin is a very, very, very small town. And if you're not from there, you're kind of an outsider. And there's you know, 500 bands in Austin, but it's basically the same 45 dudes in just different configurations. Wow. Different, you know, it's just like...
who don't leave Austin, I understand. Yeah. They just stay
there. Yeah, they're there. Wow. You stay in the Velvet Rut. They call it the Velvet Rut because it's really nice.
Right.
It's really easy.
But it is a rut.
But it's kind of like, well, you just, you know... But anyway, drummer Christopher Lyman called me up. He's like, let's make a record. So I actually started just sending him riffs on my iPhone and flew out to SF. This was 4 years ago. We made We Are the Star People, which is a groovy record. But I've always been kicking around this name, Heavy Metal Mothership, and finally I was like, well, look, we need to make just the record for end of time, music for the apocalypse. Just mind-blowing, face-melting music.
No better time
like,
than
okay,
now.
This is the time. You can feel it in the air. Yeah. Like it's a zeitgeist of something about to happen.
Yeah, there's something big on the horizon, and it's not very good.
This ain't no free-falling full moon fever, folks. This is music for
the
world,
big,
brother.
Put your big boy pants on when you're listening to this record.
Put your big boots on.
You're listening to this record. Put your big boy pants on.
Can I cheers to that? Sir?
I promise.
Yeah. To the world. Thank you.
You're totally going to dig it, though. And that, you have my word on that. You are going to dig it.
Other than the drummer, is there anybody else from the original lineup? It's just you and a drummer at this point?
Well, no. Nick Doom is the other guitar player. He's a fine gentleman who studio we recorded at Light Rail Studios.
Now, do you guys split leads, or is it one lead player and one rhythm player, or...?
Yeah, we split leads. We do a lot of like dual Scorpion stuff.
Okay. Yeah, very cool.
Which is really fun.
Yeah, man.
Right? How do you not like that?
No, not at all.
And we got Jeff Vengeance on bass now, and Jonesy Daysleeper on the keys. So it's five maniacs all together. We'll be heading out to Europe.
You've mentioned heavy metal and glam with the mothership word in there, though. Is there any little touches of funk going on at all? I know you're a big funk master yourself in your private life, but not on the records.
My drummer is black, so there is funk in the kick drum naturally. There is something about, you know, heavy metal can be very sterile and just machine-like. Mm. And I like to think there is something groovy about Turn Me On Dead Man. Mm. I think the songs groove a little bit. So, I like to attribute that to my love of funk music, which I really got into in Austin. That's when I was DJing. I was DJing in Austin because I really didn't have a band. I had to do something. Had to do something for my ego. So I was like, "I'm going to DJ."
That was one of our conversations. Not the last time you came, or the time before, but I say about 5-6 years ago, we had a conversation about that.
What kind of place were you DJing at?
Oh man, the whole town is music based.
Yeah.
You could DJ at like a coffee shop.
I DJed at a strip club for a long time.
Yeah. I did not DJ at a strip club, although you could.
It was a lot of fun.
But I learned a lot about funk music, and I learned a lot about bass.
Yeah, man.
Funk music, it's all the same players. It's all James Brown and Isley Brothers and just whatever.
Bootsy.
It's the same soul people, but then they just got hardcore. They got into narcotics, they got into sex, and they got into, like, the music got really nasty. And I was like, why have I never heard this music before? Because it was almost too nasty to play on the radio, you know? You can play Heard It Through the Grapevine, but you can't play Marvin Gaye's, I Want You Sex album.
Yeah.
I was like, why haven't I never heard this before? It's amazing.
Yeah.
People think Rick James is all super freak. If you go a little deeper into Rick James's catalog.
Rick James, man.
Like, that stuff got big in the clubs, man. Somebody was buying it.
Yeah, but it wasn't all super freak. That's the radio-friendly fucking stuff.
The radio had no choice but to play it at
Hooker's on his album cover, for Christ's sake.
I mean... funk, 70s to me is the ultimate decade, and funk might be the ultimate music because it's, man, you got musicianship, you can play, people can sing, the writing's out of the control, it's danceable, it's positive music for 90% of it, it still had the hippie kind of optimism in the early 70s, and then, of course, totally sex positive and just anything goes. I mean, it's just the ultimate music.
It really is.
Incredible.
Gotta have that black.
Get into funk music, folks, please. It'll save your life. Yeah. Or save your sex life, at least. One or the other.
Yeah, listen to James Brown.
Unless you're over 55, then consult a physician first.
Parliament Funkadelic.
Should we cut to a Marvin Gaye funk song at this point?
We're
going to cut to your songs.
That's when they pull the whole episode.
We could do this as an iTunes only episode and just totally not release it on. I mean, I'll play Marvin Gaye, but I mean, it's going to be only on iTunes. We're not going to be on YouTube.
Yeah, we're gonna play your songs, brother. You got to tell us what songs we are about to hear and why.
Well, we definitely, you queued up the one, right, Mike?
Oh, well, all right, check this out. Then.
Yeah,
there's a song. this is good. The first thing we played was called Maharishi, play off the Beatles. Thing, which of course, Turn Me On Dead Man is a play off the Beatles mythology. If you play one of the Beatles songs backwards, Revolution Number 9, supposedly you hear, and you can kind of hear it, you can hear Lennon saying on the number nine part, Turn Me On Dead Man, if you aren't enough psychedelic. And I was like, that's a really weird piece of Beatles lore. I'm like, I'm naming my band that. So that's good. The next song we'll play for you, speaking of funk, is a song off the CD, because the CD and the album are different. The album we had to cut a couple songs because it couldn't fit. This next song will be called Cosmonymph, and it is our space funk song. And it's only on the CD, folks. Cosmonymph. I'm
So aside from the obvious that it sounds better on vinyl, were you happy with recutting the songs? Did you go in and totally overhaul everything, or is it just we're going to cut these down and make them fit to a vinyl? Or did you? I mean, was there a lot of work? Did you just take the masters and just kind of go after a whole new production level?
We did. Once we realized we were making vinyl, and I had, stupidly, I was like, how long should the vinyl record be? And I looked online, I looked on Wikipedia, and said, 21 to 22 minutes per side. But in talking to real music people, that's bullshit. If you go past 17 and a half minutes per side, you start losing bass frequency. Because the vinyl records just squiggles, right? And so if you fit too much music on it, they have to reduce the squiggles, and therefore you reduce your volume.
I never have known that. That's interesting.
You reduce that. That's why if you listen to some of the old Beatles records that have like 10 songs per side, it sounds like it's coming out of a Dixie cup or something, because they just squished all the fidelity out of it. You listen to a Zeppelin record, there's just four songs on a side. They Jimmy Page knew. Floyd. He's not going to sacrifice.
Floyd extended. Floyd knew. Four albums. on the
So we went back, me and Nick Doom, and we cut minutes. We cut 30 seconds off this song, 20 seconds here.
That's
a minute here. It was agonizing. It was like, oh god, it's like cutting your finger off right here.
Yeah.
But I really believe in any art form, film or whatever. Like, it's what you leave off that makes it. Like some films are great, but they're just too long. Like, you should have cut 30 minutes off that film.
Tom Petty, Running Down a Dream.
And it's the same with music. Like, you just say your statement, kill it, and get out. You don't need all the superfluous stuff. You really don't. And so the album is stronger for us cutting it down, cutting the fat off. I really believe that.
Another problem with albums in the last 20 years is because of the vinyl cutting, and that they were able to get more space on an album starting like in the mid to late 80s, where albums became longer and longer and longer. So you went 10 songs per album to 12. Single albums were now holding 18 songs on them.
Yeah.
And well, then you got to the point where, they totally went overboard, that they became double albums, even though they were single albums,
right.
But they would release them as double albums just because now they were taking versions of the CD and putting it on vinyl when they started to bring vinyl back. Albums just became too fat, too much filler.
Yeah, and there was always filler
songs on an album.
Even for brilliant artists and bands, there was always filler.
Iron Maiden, Power Slave was one of the first albums to actually be like 55 minutes long. That was unheard of in 1984. And then that became the trend. Albums started getting longer and longer and longer. They were cutting it to the point where you could fit it.
Yeah, and that's a mistake. And then when CDs came along and you just had 80 minutes aside, people were like, oh, an album's 80 minutes long. Albums shouldn't be 80 minutes long. Unless you're a super genius, you don't have that much to say.
The quality of the material is just not there.
And even the best artists that were releasing
no
albums
one,
with 15, 16 songs
and,
on it, man.
And sonically, it's not there. I mean, I have a vinyl copy of I was Made for Loving You. Kiss from our band Kiss.
Yeah.
And it's just that song takes up one whole side. That's it. And man, the sound quality is just amazing.
Wow. Oh, yeah,
it's
like dance mix of it.
It's a 12 inch of one song. And
I don't have the 12 inch.
It's the best sound
I
ever.
Believe it.
And then if you play that song on just on the album it came out with the other five songs.
Especially when you're
a
in
world
there,
of different.
You got the cup on your ear and you're chewing it up. You're like, this is
that's really cool, bro.
At the time when I was DJing, all that club stuff was all 12 inch, and I was just Soundarama and Raw. I was just going there, thumbing through 12 inch stuff.
So music became commodity. It became fast food, and that's it lost its appeal. But music is magic. We got to bring back the sacredness of it. Part of the sacredness is the sonic quality. People have to understand. I mean, the modern, like, I don't know if it's hip hop or what, the trap music or bump and grind stuff. It's made on computers, folks, and computers are cool, but there's no timbre, there's no color, there's no variation of sound. It's not a real horn, it's not a real conga in the back, it's not a real
And if it is, it's sampled.
It's sampled, and guess what? It's the equivalent of looking at CGI movies. It's
even hand claps are processed.
You don't you don't believe it after a while. And your eyes,
love hip hop.
Whatever.
It's like masturbation versus sex.
I'm a Dr. Dre, huge Dr. Dre fan. And I'm
well, Dr. Dre was recording on Too Much Tape back in the day. He knew.
He knows sound.
Even when he went to computers, as far as I understand, he would take the final mix and run it through tape.
He knows the sound.
To have that sound. And put it back onto digital.
Yeah.
To get the sound.
The truth, yeah. He knows. He definitely
so
knows.
He, he's an exception.
Yeah.
But the modern gay people.
No, I agree with you.
It's just ones and zeros, man.
Binary code.
Let's play this game. Pick two singers. The two greatest singers ever in rock slash soul.
Your opinion only.
You go first, Dick Nixon.
We've already done this.
We want to hear what you got.
We've had this episode. This is gun to the head. You got to pick two. I'll probably ask you two guitars.
They don't have to be the greatest successful. One of mine was David Lee Roth.
Two greatest singers?
One of mine was David Lee Roth, because I think he's the greatest frontman ever.
Two greatest singers.
Yeah.
Your opinion.
That's tough, man. If rock singers or just all-time singers?
All-time, man.
Or for, getting lucky in the bedroom singers or what?
What does it for you?
You have a gun to your head and you're about to lose your fucking life. You don't pick two singers.
Man, God, you're killing me.
Prince? He was one of mine.
God.
Dave. David Lee Roth.
You know?
When you played that.
Like a voice that you like, man.
I'm going to need some more tequila for this. Billie Holiday, I don't know what she was on, but sure, her voice is just
nice,
man, just ethereal, out of this world. You know, people make fun of him, but Lionel Richie, when he was in the Commodores, was out of control.
Say it
off. It almost sounded like glam. It almost reminds me of Bowie before Bowie.
They were glam, man.
Lionel's out of control. You know, Bowie, the way Bowie didn't have the strongest voice, but the way he used it was amazing. You know, Halford just blows my mind.
I'm from the school of Bruce Dickinson over Halford. I'm the more of the Iron Maiden.
Yeah, you're the Maiden guy in the crowd.
Yeah.
Prince is the ultimate musician and, you know, ultimate singer. Although he bit a lot from James Brown,
yeah,
of course.
Another one, yeah.
Doesn't get smoother than Marvin Gaye. Man, this is a dirty,
black guys,
this,
man.
This,
black.
You know, this is a dirty trick, Stig Nixon. This is a dirty trick.
What are you doing over there?
What was the last big concert that you went to?
I went to see a great concert Saturday night. I went to see Drab Majesty, this band I told you about.
I'm playing them
for you. Really amazing, new dark wave band from L.A. Very, I don't know, Gary Newman-ish maybe, but cool. Very cool. And they opened up for members of Love and Rockets, Daniel Ash.
Oh, shit.
Love and Rockets, amazing, right? The Earth, Sun, Moon record. And I think one of the members of Bauhaus was there. They got a band called Pop Tone. And I wasn't sure what that was going to be like. Because I'm like, is this just old guys playing? Because they played Love and Rocket songs and some Bauhaus songs. And I was like, is this just going to be like some old guy show? And those guys knew how to rock, man. It was just leveled the place, just crushed it. So that was Saturday
interesting,
night.
Interesting.
Pop Tone and Drab Majesty, amazing. I've got tickets to go see Marilyn Manson next Monday.
He just got banged up.
Yeah, did you see that?
He got hurt. He canceled 9 shows. Yeah. I think my show is the first one he's going to be back on.
You know, I was listening to him. I'm sorry.
No, that's all right. I was just curious if he was back. Out West?
Yeah, San Francisco.
I was listening to him recently, man. How is he going to age with his vocal style, dude? How is he going to do that?
He's doing something he never said he would do, which is his new record, The Pale Emperor. There's three bonus tracks at the end, which are kind of almost like acoustic unplugged tracks.
Uh-huh.
And so he swore he'd never do acoustic stuff.
Could
but
he jump the shark? Maybe.
His writing style, you know, it's kind of shock rock a lot of it. But with acoustic behind it, it almost makes it a little more authentic. And you know, it's dark, and his voice is just amazing.
Because I was wondering recently, man.
Really
like,
good. I think it's one of his best records.
I'm a fan of the classic Manson, but it's been a long time since I paid attention, and I'm asking myself, what is this dude doing nowadays? How is he evolving?
I think he's
going
to age gracefully.
He's
going
to age gracefully.
Yeah,
that's remarkable to me.
I think he's going
to
age gracefully.
Remarkable to me. I never really got out of that.
Because he sings like, yeah, how is he going to do that at the age 40, in his 40s, dude?
Who was the guy who made you pick up a guitar?
Yeah, talk about guitar here.
It's got to be somebody from Priest, probably.
Oh, well, I can tell you the exact day, time, hour, and minute there, Pat. I was just a kid. I was just a little kid growing up in Jersey, just a little worm. And then I started hitting puberty, and my ears opened up. It was like I never heard music before. It was like someone turned on the stereo. And there was a little shit music shop, I think in Ford's Avenue or something, called American Music.
Still there. Well, not anymore, but it was there. Oh, no, American's still there.
Is American Music still up
Ford's
and running?
American Music is gone. American Music American. Is still there.
Is it?
Yeah, it's by the gas station.
Is it still going?
No. What am I thinking? I apologize. No. Ford's Music is gone.
I think it's gone.
What's the guy that's over here? That's Edison, actually. That's not Ford's.
Yeah.
Right? I'm sorry.
American Music was right across from the funeral parlor we were at the other night, the place he's talking about.
And then it turned to Ford's Music. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're gone. They're gone. Okay.
I had walked past this music shop 1,000 times and never even noticed it. And then, you know, whatever, was going through those changes, 11 years old, and I just started, like, I remember walking past the music shop. I saw a guitar in there. It was like a red Strat-looking guitar. And I was actually, like, physically attracted to the thing.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, my God, I need this thing. I need this guitar. I went home, begged my mother to buy it for me, which she did. And, at that time, that was early 80s. I mean, metal was big, really big. So you had Priest. You had,
Eddie Van Halen, I guess.
Van Halen crew. Like, just all those guys. Yeah. Zeppelin. And just it was just the sound of the electric guitar. Just I couldn't believe it. I still can't believe it. You know, it's just the sound of the fucking
thing. Do you still play Strat style now?
No, I don't play Strats. I play Gibsons.
I remember the first time we played, we jammed, and we were in high school, and I was playing Yngwie stuff, and you brought Satriani over, and you're like, no, man. Satch boogie, man. Satch boogie, man. There's no black in Yngwie, man. There's no Elvis in Yngwie. Yeah. Listen to this.
Oh, my God. Well, I remember
probably the first time we hung out, man.
I remember we would hold court and go over Stick Nixon's house and listen to, watch Headbangers Ball.
Yeah, that was a little bit after
Saturday
that.
Nights. Yeah.
That was a big thing. It was a bonding experience.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had a couple of buddies I used to do that with, man.
So we got a new segment, maybe. Mike is our man on the Michael Ziggy Minucci is our man on the street, man
Mike on
the
streets.
Beat. He is going to send us new hot rock and roll music from his mind and taste and ears into ours, into yours, the listening public.
That could be amazing. I could do little audio clips like, I'm here in Berlin right now. You got to check out this band and hold up the phone and then segue into their song proper. Or, you know, I'm here in San Francisco right now.
Wow, Mike on the street.
There it is. All right.
The fourth Mike.
Michael Ziggy, Turn Me On, Dead Man.
Heavy metal mothership.
Thank you so much, guys.
Thank you.
Power of rock and roll.
For coming in
Power
here,
of rock and roll has brought us together.
What do you want to what do you want to
close out with?
Close out with.
Mighty Asteroid 9, music for the end of the world.
And when is this going to be available on iTunes?
This is available now.
On iTunes.
Now.
Go get it.
iTunes, Spotify, Bandcamp.
Bandcamp.
Vinyl.
I got a great story about Bandcamp. No, I'm just kidding.
We'll see you guys next time.
Ciao, baby.